This is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the September 24th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Tuscola City Council. Mayor wants to clean up junk properties by David Porter. Tuscola Mayor Dan Kleiss said Monday that he wants to start cracking down on nuisance properties. He said some yards are looking more like a junkyard than a residence. He said he will ask the city attorney to review the ordinances to see if they can be strengthened. He said it would cost the city money to go after dilapidated properties, but that we'll find the money somewhere. Alderman Tony Huey added that some residents thumb their noses at the police when confronted about their properties. Kleiss said junked up yards are the biggest complaint he hears in town. The only action item on the agenda other than the consent agenda was a contract to Swindeman Incorporation for rewiring the city's network. The last two meetings, the city has had trouble connecting to the internet for people wanting to view the proceedings online. Treasurer Alta Long said some of the wiring and equipment is 25 years old and that the city has always tried to do it on the cheap. Some of the wiring runs through heating and cooling ducts to avoid having to run it through walls. In the consent agenda, the city approved a community building lease with alcohol for the Tuscola High School Alumni Association's all-school reunion September 25th and the homecoming parade route September 26th. Also approved was a Veterans Day parade for November 11th. Kleiss noted that the class of 75 will be celebrating its 50th year, which happens to be his class. He suggested that it's the greatest class alive, challenging the long-standing feud between local webcasters Mike Carroll and David Porter as to whether the class of 65 or 83 is the best. The mayor also offered condolences to Fire Chief Brian Moody and his wife Kate, as well as the Hettinger family, on the passing of Kate's father. Long also commented that the city is conducting a water department survey and asked that residents complete the survey online if possible. It's a mandated survey from the EPA and is done every 3 years. Residents who cannot complete the survey online may fill out a paper survey at the city hall. A couple of city officials said they had already completed their surveys and said it takes only about 30 seconds to do so. It can be found online at https://tuscola.org/crossconnect. The next article is from the Arthur Village Board, considers community center fee revisions by Ariana Cherry. The Arthur Village Board continued the discussion regarding updates to the community center's fee schedule, which has remained unchanged since 1999 at the September 15th meeting. Proposed revisions include offering local nonprofit organizations free use of the facility and a discounted rate for Arthur residents, $10 per hour or $75 per day, both without a deposit fee. Non-residents, however, would face charges up to $350 for profit-making events. While board members considered the new schedule, they postponed a decision until the next meeting, where a resolution will be presented. Public Works Grant Corum provided an update on the recent community cleanup days, reporting increased participation despite the hot weather. The event filled 6 dumpsters with various items, including mattresses, grills, and large appliances, with one dumpster dedicated solely to mattresses, Corum noted. We even had at least over 20 smokers alone, he added, with the event proceeded smoothly with no complaints. The village will receive a bill from the landfill based on the weight of the collected items. Thanks were extended to all trustees who assisted. Other board actions and updates. TIF facade grant approved $2,188. TIF facade grant was approved for property improvements at 107 South Vine Street. Wastewater treatment plant upgrade, proposal from Prime Solution for a $13,000 conveyor addition at the wastewater treatment plant was approved. Concrete replacement, Hirschberger Concrete's $16,000 proposal for concrete replacement on the 100 block of Surrey Lane was approved. Sewer main replacement, approved a bid from J.C. Oyer for $9,800 to replace 110 feet of clay sewer main in the 800 block of Lincoln Place. Community building flooring, 2 separate proposals were approved for flooring replacement in the community building. Countryside Flooring for Materials, $19,000, and Helmwood Construction for Removal and Installation, $18,000. Tourism grant request, Angie Parsons representing Simply Arthur requested a $2,000 local tourism grant to fund a 3-month seasonal ad in Midwest Living magazine aiming to generate leads for the village. Simply Arthur Report. Simply Arthur reported an increase to 52 active local investors and the launch of a new Arthur Connection box for the community newsletter email collection. Public Works response. Public Works team swiftly repaired a water main break on September 5th and assisted in the teardown from the Cheese Festival. Financial report. Treasurer Mike Hilgenberg reported $66,000. Comptroller Erica Carter reported a current bank balance of $959,000. And a tax increment financing, TIF district value of and $88 million. The next article from the Arthur School Board plans $22 million in bonds with 15-year payback by Arianna Cherry. A public hearing was held to discuss the Arthur School Board's intent to sell up to $22 million in school fire prevention and safety bonds. These bonds are designated for the high school replacement project and are linked to a health life safety study conducted by BLDD Architects in Decatur, which was submitted to the state. The information provided by BLDD to the state determined the necessary repairs and their associated costs. After deliberation, the school board agreed to grant the district a 15-year repayment period for the bonds. Many believe this time frame would offer this district financial flexibility, especially given ongoing state funding issues. The next board meeting will discuss a formal submission of the bonds detailing the 15-year term, along with a resolution setting the tax levy and interest rate. Other conversations from school board members included reaching out to former alumni and alumni groups who may have an interest in owning remaining pieces of the high school for memorabilia, which will be donated or sold for fundraising purposes. Other items discussed and voted upon. District risk management plan was approved. BLDD architect contract for the building replacement was approved. CORE construction contract for CM services was approved. The fascia is getting on at Levington Grade School. Superintendent Shannon Creek is gathering more quotes for repairs. Arthur Grade School received a new water cooler from Delta Dental H2O Go grant. The Levington Grade School received an ISBE after school programs grant. District will be applying for the maintenance grant and is currently discussing what projects need to be completed. Cheek set the following superintendent goals for the 2025-26 school year. Cheek's primary focus will be on the health life safety replacement of the high school, a project that has received state approval. This includes the planning and preparation of the design, bidding, budgeting, and logistics. The district will keep the public and parents informed through the local newspaper and news articles posted by the district and building principals. Additionally, they will manage the relocation of high school students to Levington Grade School and Levington Grade School students to Arthur Grade School. Monthly updates will be provided at the school board and Board of Education meetings. For the 2025-2026 school year, the district is collaborating with the administrative team to develop more specific improvement goals for each building in the district. They've already developed a curriculum matrix, aligned assignments to standards, and began using assessment data to guide curriculum and instructional decisions. Cheek will continue to collaborate with the administrative team on developing these school improvement plans for the upcoming school year, which will be presented in the September Board of Education meeting. Throughout the school year, Cheek will hold meetings with the administration to monitor progress and identify any necessary adjustments to these plans. Ongoing communication and dialogue with the administration team are crucial for achieving the presented goals. Personnel report certified. Accepted Cameron Hampton, request for a leave of absence. Non-certified. Approved hiring Cassidy Likas, LOR, as an aide at AGS. Approved hiring Bailey Bieleski as an aide at LGS. Extracurricular. Approved hiring Alexa Miller as high school girls basketball assistant coach. Approved hiring Guy Bates as the high school head scholastic bowl coach. Approved hiring Jessica Clarkson as the spelling bee sponsor at Arthur Grade School. Approved hiring Melissa Hopkins as the yearbook sponsor for Arthur Grade School. The last first page story, Chinese linked Fufeng no longer considering Tuscola manufacturing by Ben Crane. Plans for a major corn wet milling facility in Douglas counties have been called off after more than a year of discussions with Chinese-based food ingredient company Fufeng Group, according to local officials. In an email sent to taxing bodies this week, Douglas County Economic Development Executive Director Brian Moody confirmed that Fufeng has decided not to move forward with a project at the proposed Tuscola site. "We're obviously disappointed this project will not be happening in Douglas County," Moody wrote. "It says a great deal about our county and region that we're able to come together in a relatively short time frame to engage and attract this project to our area." Fufeng had been working with global communications firm APCO Worldwide, a site selection team, and real estate representatives from Lyodell-Bassell, which owns the property under consideration. A purchase agreement had been finalized between Fufeng and Lyodell-Bassell, but ultimately the company chose not to proceed. Several local sources indicated that Congresswoman Mary Miller may have influenced the company's decision. In July, Miller introduced the Protecting Our Farms and Homes with China Act. While the bill does not specifically bar companies with ties to China from owning former industrial brownfield sites such as this one, Miller issued a pointed statement arguing that U.S. land should not be sold to our enemies. "Prized American land is Not for sale to our enemies, Miller stated on her website. The Chinese Communist Party is the greatest threat to our national security, and their aggressive push to buy up our farmland and homes is a direct attack on our sovereignty. It's long past time we took back control and put America's food supply and communities back in American hands where they belong. Miller did not immediately return a call from the County Chronicle seeking additional clarification. The decision in Tuscola comes as Fufeng continues to weigh its U.S. strategy. Industry reporting this summer noted the company is still seeking an American site for the wet corn mill after its Grand Forks, North Dakota proposal was abandoned in 2023 due to national security concerns near a military installation. Fufeng's U.S. arm has advertised engineering roles tied to a prospective mill, and the company has said it remains committed to finding a location to support its customers and operations in the U.S. market. The reporting also cited earlier coverage naming Douglas County as one potential location under consideration. The source was Farm Progress. Trade and policy headwinds remain part of the backdrop. A recent anti-dumping probe into xanthan gum from China included Fufeng among the companies examined, and broader U.S.-China tensions have coincided with periods when China has avoided purchasing some American commodities, pressuring farm prices. The source, again, Farm Progress. Local producers say global flows are being felt at home. China is not buying our soybeans at this time, sourcing them from South America. That is holding bean prices down, said farmer Larry Dallas. It would seem that if more Southern Hemisphere soybeans are going to China, that would open other markets for the U.S. That does not seem to be the case so far. Moody said officials remain in contact with APCO in hopes of learning more about Fufeng's deliberations and future plans. He added the county has requested all data gathered during the company's due diligence process and has received a positive initial response. Meanwhile, other prospects have expressed interest in the site. Since our work began on this project, there's been interest from other prospects on this site, Moody said. We've begun the process of connecting their teams with those prospects. Should one of those prospects gain some traction, we will be in contact with you. The project drew significant attention over the past year as Douglas County positioned itself as a potential home for the facility. While the plans are no longer moving forward, Moody thanked local partners for their cooperation. Again, we want to thank you for your responsiveness and engagement in our pursuit of and scale of the project, Moody said, told the taxing bodies. It would not be possible without your partnership. We look forward to continuing the work with you in the future. We'll move now to the obituaries. Susan Diane Mast, 71, of Winfield, Kansas, passed away Saturday, August 16, 2025, at St. Francis Hospital in Wichita, Kansas. Memorial services will be held at Island Park's Soroptimus Pavilion at Winfield at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 25th, under the direction of Miles Funeral Home. A memorial has been established in Diane's name for the American Heart Association. Orville Thomas, or Richardson III, 72 of Arcola, passed away at 3:45 p.m. on Sunday, September 14, 2025, at Odd Fellows Rebecca Home in Mattoon. Special thanks to friends Karen Kennedy, David and Dottie Shepherd, Lynn Kleck, and Greg and Gloria Williams for their love and support over the past few months. Bertha Ann Evelyn, 76, of Atwood, went to be with her Lord at 3 p.m. on Saturday, September 20, 2025, surrounded by family at her residence. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, September 26th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. Visitation will be held 1 hour before the memorial service from noon till 1 p.m. at the funeral home on Friday. Paul Dale Naus, 75, of Mattoon, formerly of Arcola, died at 2:29 a.m. Monday, September 22nd, 2025 at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, September 25th at Schrader Funeral Home, Arcola, with visitation from 10 a.m. until the funeral service. Burial will follow at the Arcola Cemetery. Dr. Barbara Bream, 80, passed away on Sunday, September 14th, 2025 in Urbana. A celebration of life service was held Thursday, September 18th at the Arcola United Methodist Church with Pastor Seth Emerson officiating. Visitation was September 18th at the church. Schrader Funeral Home Arcola assisted the family with arrangements. Myrtle J. Esten, 87, of Tuscola, passed away on Monday morning, September 8th, 2025, at her residence. Funeral services were held Friday, September 12th, at the Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, Tuscola, Illinois. Burial followed in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation was held Thursday, September 11th, at the funeral home. Daryl E. Morthland, 90, of Arthur, passed away Wednesday evening, September 17, 2025, at Carriage Crossing in Arcola. Services celebrating his life were held Sunday, September 21st, at Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood. Visitation was held prior to the service at the funeral home. The next article, Pringle to present on bald eagles at the vault. Local photographer Kirby Pringle will give a presentation on bald eagles in Illinois at 2 p.m. Saturday, Vault Art Gallery in downtown Tuscola. The talk and slideshow are in conjunction with an exhibit of Kirby and Cindy Pringle's nature photographs currently on display at the vault through September 30th, entitled Birds and Butterflies. I thought the talk would be a good way to wrap up our exhibit at the vault, Pringle said. Bald eagles are among my favorite birds to photograph, and there's a growing population in Illinois, including a number of nests in the Tuscola area. You don't usually think of bald eagles nesting on the prairie, but they're out there, and most years they've been successful in raising eaglets. The 30-minute talk with photos will examine the various life stages of the bald eagle, nesting and feeding habits, and the life-threatening challenges they can face, including those created by humans, lead poisoning, and others created by nature, avian bird flu. Bald eagles nest earlier than any other bird in Illinois, and that will be happening before you know it, starting in late February, Pringle said. Hundreds of bald eagles also migrate to Illinois from surrounding northern states during the winter, especially along the Mississippi River, so that's another thing for people who love watching these magnificent birds to look forward to seeing. The Pringles, who live in Tuscola, are best known for their dog people photographs, whimsical images of dogs with human-like qualities, and have published 4 books. They have been at the vault since 2015 and have a permanent space in the gallery. The Pringles have also been heavily involved in monarch butterfly conservation for 25 years, and Kirby has become increasingly devoted to bird photography for the last 5 years. The next article, workshops aim to demystify grant writing for local businesses and nonprofits. Three dates set for Arcola and Tuscola by Ben Crane. Business and nonprofits across Douglas County will soon have a chance to learn how to navigate the complex world of grant funding. Nicole Van Heift, owner of Van Heift Grant Lab and a former staff member at the Vermilion Advantage, will lead 3 free workshops hosted by the Douglas County Economic Development Corporation. The sessions are designed to give attendees an inside look of what it takes to find, prepare for, and win grant funding. The workshops will be offered on 3 different dates, Tuesday, October 21st at 6 p.m. in Tuscola, Wednesday, October 22nd at 7 a.m. in Arcola, and Thursday, October 23rd at noon in Tuscola. Each session will last a little over an hour and will cover topics such as what grants are and are not, types of funding available to small businesses and nonprofits, what funders are looking for, common misconceptions and red flags, and what makes an organization grant ready. Van Heift will also provide an overview of pre-qualification steps, including requirements through SAM.gov, GATA, and EUI, while highlighting how her business, the Van Heift Grant Lab, can help organizers move forward. Van Heift, who now consults with clients across East Central Illinois, specializes in helping organizations access their grant readiness and cut through the red tape of applications. Organizers said the workshops intended to simplify the process for business owners who often lack the time to navigate the steps while running their operations. All businesses love the idea of free money, but in the end it takes time, preparation, and often pages of explanation, budgets, and forms. Stephanie McMahon noted, these workshops are meant to simplify that process and give people the tools they need to be prepared. Attendees will receive a free grant readiness checklist, a basic funding roadmap, and access to a post-workshop link to schedule a complimentary 15-minute follow-up call. Registration is available online at www.douglasedc.org/stayinformed/grantworkshops. For more information, contact Stephanie McMahon at 217-253-2112, extension 134. The next article, Ambara River Agency announces start of energy assistance program. The Ambara River Basin Agency is administrator of the energy assistance program in Clark, Coles, Crawford, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Jasper, Lawrence, and Richland counties, is pleased to announce that funds are available to assist income-eligible households with their natural gas, propane, and or electric bills and furnish assistance for inoperable heating systems. The program will begin taking applications on October 1st for older adults, 60+, individuals with a disability, families with children under the age of 6 years, and households that are disconnected from their utilities, have a disconnection notice, or have had less than 25% of their propane tank. All other income-eligible households can start applying on November 1st. Applications will be taken on a first-come, first-served basis through August 15, 2026, or until funding is exhausted. Households that receive a one-time benefit may be returned during the program year for a reconnection assistance of furnace association benefits if needed. The program has expanded eligibility this year. Households must be at or below 60% of the state median income to receive a benefit from LIHEAP. The 30-day income guidelines for LIHEAP are based on state median income, federal poverty guidelines, and a number of persons living in the household. The income guidelines are as follows: 1, 3,332, 2, 4,357, 3, 5,382, and 4, 6,407. Go to nbayinc.org or LillyPillanois to know how income limits for households with 5 members or more. The Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, the LIHEAP, provides one-time benefits to income-eligible homeowners and renters to help with their energy bills and for reconnection of energy service. Propane customers who are part of the priority group are encouraged to apply when the program opens in October. Propane prices typically increase during the winter, so by applying early, propane customers will see their LIHEAP benefit go further. To apply, you must submit all documentation required. 1. Proof of gross income from all household members for the prior 30-day period beginning with the date of application. 2. For all customers new to LIHEAP and or new household members of previous customers, proof of Social Security numbers. For all household members, individuals without a Social Security or individual tax identification number can still apply, and IRBA will advise accordingly. 3. A copy of current heat and electric bills issued within the last 30 days. 4. Cash assistance is available for renters who can provide a copy of their lease rental agreement showing their heating costs are included in the rent. 5. Other documents may be needed based on your household situation. If you have questions regarding this, please call our office. Please call IRBA at 217-923-3113 for outreach locations and schedules information on what documents are needed to apply, different ways to submit your application. 217-923-3113. 253-4434. IRBA awarded a $30,000 grant to support critical home repairs for rural veterans. The Ambarawa River Basin Association, IRBA, Housing Counseling Department announced it has been granted a $30,000 grant through the 2025 Affordable Housing for Rural Veterans Initiative, a program administered by the Housing Assistance Council with the generous support of the Home Depot Foundation. These funds will be used to provide critical health and safety home roof repairs for 3 local rural low-income veterans residing within IRBA's 9-county service area, which includes Clark, Coles, Crawford, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Jasper, Lawrence, and Richland counties. Veterans in rural areas often face unique barriers to safe and stable housing, said Sandy Dieters, Housing Counselor Coordinator for IRBA. This funding will provide us an urgent address urgent roof repair needs that directly impact the quality of life and help ensure our local veterans can safely remain in their homes. The AHRV initiative supports nonprofit housing organizations in their effort to ensure veterans living in rural communities through affordable housing activities, including critical repairs. ERBA is honored to be selected for this initiative and remains deeply committed to serving those who have served their country. Veterans or family members interested in applying for assistance can contact Sandy Dieters, IRBA's Housing Counseling Coordinator, at 217-331-7031. For more information, visit http://erbainc.org/ or www.facebook.com/Ambarawa River Basin. For more information about heating assistance, Council, visit https://ruralhome.org. For more information about the Home Depot Foundation, visit corporate.homedepot.com. The next article, Douglas County Board Approves Fees and Appoints Commissioners, by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board approved payments and fees for projects and appointed drainage district commissioners around the county at their meeting on Wednesday. Perry Albin was appointed to Brushy Fork Drainage District, Jeff Johns to Consolidated Drainage District No. 5 of Tuscola and Arcola, Gregory M. Hilgenberg to Craig Drainage District No. 13 of Tuscola and Arcola, Jeremy Schunkweiler to Drainage District No. 4 in Arcola, Philip A. Jacob to Drainage District No. 10 in Arcola, Larry Hirschberger to Drainage District No. 5 of Beaudry, Lloyd Little to Drainage District No. 8 of Beaudry, John Flum to Drainage District No. 4 of Tuscola, Steve H. Wetzel to DeHaze Branch Drainage District, Bradley Little to Kemp Drainage District, Lester Yoder to Miller Drainage District, and Brent Wynn to Union Drainage District with number 3 of Arcola and Tuscola. The board also passed Resolution 25R32, an approval of appropriating $50,000 in motor fuel tax funds for a local public agency engineering services agreement, $70,000 in opioid settlement funds were disbursed to the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, $15,000, and the East Central Alcoholism and Drug Council, an Our House in Charleston, and Be Brave Incorporated for $18,000 each. The board also approved architectural fees for design for the animal control facility for a total of $30,000. Bruce Oye was appointed to the Arthur Fire Protection District, and member of the board, Gary Luth, was reappointed to the Douglas County Ag Center Board of Directors. Mathis Excavating in Duquesne was awarded a contract by the board for concrete crushing for $175,000, and two resolutions were approved canceling the certificates of purchase for seven parcels to round out the meeting. It's an article, rain would be bountiful, but not for every crop. Douglas County Agriculture by Larry Dallas. Harvest 2025 is starting in Douglas County as I write on September 14th. A few early planted soybean fields have been harvested. Half-price drying at local grain elevators also helped get the corn harvest started. I've heard only a few yield numbers, but they seem average or below. The dry weather may have hurt soybeans more than corn. The southern two-thirds of Illinois is in various stages of drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. We're approaching the time when rain will not benefit the crops anymore. A few soybean fields are still green enough that rain would help seed size. Most of the corn is black-layered and is mature. Rain will not help those plants. Rain will be beneficial. We have had our cover crop seed flown a week ago. It needs rain to germinate and then more rain to help it establish and grow. The cornfields are dangerously dry. Any fire would spread rapidly with a lot of fuel to burn. Rain would aid the soybean harvest by knocking the leaves off the mature plants. Rain would help with fall tillage, too. We have not tried to chisel any of our fields, but the soil must be very hard. Pulling a chisel plow will take a lot of fuel, I'm afraid. Fall nitrogen application will be tough as well without some precipitation. Southern Illinois farmers are dealing with even worse weather. After being kept in planting by wet weather this spring, some areas had no rain for 2 months. About 20% of the 302,000 acres of farm ground in Wayne County, Illinois, went unplanted this year. In other areas, the crops that were planted were scarcely worth harvesting. The worst droughts of my farming career, 1988 and 2012, were preceded by a dry fall and winter. There's some apprehension that we're setting up for worse conditions in 2026. There's plenty of time to recharge our subsoil moisture, but that precipitation needs to fall before the ground freezes or in the spring. We went into this growing season dry and never caught up. The U.S. Department of Agriculture continues to predict large corn and soybean crops. In the September estimate, the corn yield was lowered, but planted acres were raised to project the second largest corn crop on record. Corn exports are very good this year, but the expectation of a huge crop is keeping a lid on prices. China is not buying our soybeans at this time, sourcing them from South America. That is holding bean prices down. It would seem that if there were more Southern Hemisphere soybeans are going to China, they're being opening other markets for the U.S., but that does not seem to be the case so far. We would like our cover crops to get well established this fall. The growing plants will take up and sequester nutrients left in the soil after the crop is removed. The nutrients can't end up in surface water or leach into groundwater. We will kill the cover crop next spring ahead of planting. The decomposing plants will then release the nutrients they took up as they grow. Our prairie soils owe their dark color to organic matter from a millennium of grasses growing and decaying. The lighter timber soils along rivers and in southern Illinois lack this organic matter. Longtime advocates of cover crops are seeing improved organic matter in their light timber soils. They are growing a second crop over the winter and adding that organic matter to their fields. The third week of September is nationally recognized as Farm Safety Week. Agriculture has been historically dangerous. One of my great-great-grandfathers survived the Civil War but died when a horse he was harnessing kicked him in the head. We noticed that the antique farm shows we go on the total lack of protective shields on the earlier power machinery. Ear corn pickers were notorious for injuring operators that were carelessly unplugging the stock rolls. Grain entrapment has recently been more in the news. A farmer from Macon County was killed in August when working to clean out a grain bin. Typically, grain will fail to flow as needed in a bin from being too wet or crusting without thinking the farmer will go to dislodge the grain and be engulfed when it breaks loose. A Farm Bureau County president I knew well lost his life this way a few years ago. We've all been guilty of altering or removing the shields on our farm equipment. An ongoing joke is when a farmer trades a combine, he has to go in the corner of the shed for the shields removed very early in ownership of the machine. This is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.